My name is Li Tae Cheng, and I'd like to present my paper for CCE97, and it's entitled The Design of a Vibrotactile Virtual Testbed. This is actually a presentation of the work I've done for my master's degree at the University of Waterloo under the supervision of Dr. John Robinson and Rick Haseman, and I'm presently in the Multimedia Communications Lab here at Memorial. Here's the outline of the presentation. In the introduction, I'll talk about basically the objectives of this presentation, namely to present a high-level design of a vibrotactile virtual testbed, which we'll find out more in the presentation. Then I'll talk about an experimental design, the design of an experiment that I conducted during my master's research. And from this experiment, we'll derive the system requirements and constraints to develop a vibrotactile virtual testbed. And then from there, we will actually devise the supporting architecture and select the components to develop the system. And then we'll talk about the actual software implementation very briefly. And then at the end, we'll talk about the final performance of the system and show some experimental results that use this virtual testbed. So virtual reality makes use of interactive three-dimensional multimedia information. It emphasizes the use of visual and audio information in the past history of virtual reality. It's only been the past few years that there's been an emphasis on other types of modalities for feedback, such as tactile feedback. We want to give the user the sense of touch as well as an immersive visual and audio environment. And one way to provide tactile feedback is to provide vibration. My research interest during my master's degree was to substitute vibrotactile feedback for force feedback. And the reason why you might want to do this is that you can produce vibrations much more easily and much more cheaply, and you can sense this information much more easily and you can control it much more easily than perhaps a force feedback system. You can produce vibration by just controlling a little buzzer, whereas a force feedback system might make use of some kind of robotic exoskeleton. And during my master's research, I wanted to evaluate the impact of doing this substitution. So we want to take a set of users and make them use this vibration feedback system and see what happens if they use this instead of using force feedback in some kind of virtual experiment. So the objective of this presentation and my research paper here in CCE97 is to present the virtual testbed, the underlying software architecture to implement the experiment. So we'll look at the technology behind the experiment that supports this experiment. But to understand this, we have to know about the actual experimental design. So the goal of the experiment, as I mentioned before, is to evaluate the impact of introducing vibrotactile feedback. We want to compare this with standard virtual reality inputs, such as visual and audio feedback. And to measure a success in this experiment, we will measure how long it takes to finish the task and the amount of damage that you inflict on the object. Because what we want to do in our task is a pick-and-place experiment. Simply take some fragile object, we'll call it the grape, have the user pick up the synthetic grape in the virtual environment and drop it into a cup. So for this task, we want to have three types of feedback modes. We want to produce vibration. So when you actually touch the object, your fingers will feel some kind of varying level of vibration, which will represent the force feedback. We want to vary the color of the object to provide your visual cue. And we will vary the pitch of the objects, or pitch of the environment, so that you hear a sound when you pick up an object, and this will provide your audio cue. In terms of organizing the experiment itself, we want to divide our groups into two sets. We have a control group and a vibration group. The control group will be our reference group, so they will have the standard visual and audio cues. The vibration group has all three feedback modes, and so we put these two groups to the same set of conditions, and we examine the results and compare if there's actually a difference, whether vibration actually has an advantage over just ordinary visual and audio cues. So they would go through a practice session, six trials, over three sessions in 1 week. So now that we have some understanding of what the experiment is, we can derive the kind of constraints and requirements we need to support this in terms of hardware and software. So we have various bits of hardware, various bits of software, and they have different types of needs and requirements. We need some kind of 3D tracking mechanism because we need to know where your hand is when it's trying to pick up an object. We also need more than just the position of the hand. We need to know how your fingers are oriented, so we need some kind of grasping input device. Finally, to produce the vibration, we need some kind of tactile feedback device. And of course, we need some kind of visual and audio system to provide the visual and audio cues. To balance the hardware, we have the software, and obviously we need some kind of graphical and audio system for software to provide the visual and audio cues. And of course, we need to have some kind of modeling to take care of how you detect the collisions and how do you model the pressures on the object, as well as record all this information for later research results. And driving all this hardware and software are a set of constraints. So being a research lab on a limited budget, we want to minimize the cost of buying all this equipment. In VR, we tend to have exorbitant prices on hardware, so we have to watch the price tag. But on the other hand, we do want to minimize the implementation. We do still want to use standard off-the-shelf hardware and equipment as well as software so that we can focus on the experiment, not on customizing software and writing our own equipment and such. Balancing this is a bunch of maximizing constraints. We want to maximize the comfort of the user because we don't want to influence the results by forcing the user in some very uncomfortable apparatus. Also, we want to maximize system performance so that, again, you don't influence the results by some inherent system lag or latency in your hardware and software. So now that we have some idea of the requirements and constraints demanded by the experiment, we can then try to fit all these bits and pieces together in some kind of architecture. So we try to relate all these requirements together in some kind of diagram. And then from this relationship, we can determine what kind of components we can use to fit inside this architecture. So as you can see, our input hardware, grasping input device and 3D tracking device, would take information from the user, feed them through some kind of software interface, and process them into a software model. The model then computes some information and feeds it back to the user through some kind of graphical and audio feedback, software interface, as well as tactile feedback, and present all this information back to the user. So it's a standard kind of feedback loop. Now we can fit in the actual components. So now that we have an idea of the architecture, we can start putting the actual pieces. So in this case, we've selected for a 3D tracking device, the Logitech Red Baron, which is a 6-degree of freedom device, which uses ultrasonics to determine the position of your hand. It is readily available in the lab, so our cost constraint is eliminated. And it's fairly fast. It reports 50 reports per second, which is more than adequate for our experiment. And the receiving tracker is about the size of your palm, so it can be comfortably fitted onto the user for the experiment. The second piece of hardware is our grasping input device. And in this case, we use a 5DT glove. And it's basically a cheap alternative to the VPL data glove. It's about $500, so it's cheap, and it provides a natural interface. You don't have to put the user in some kind of robotic system. You just wear a glove, and all they have to do is just pick up an object naturally. Each digit on the finger provides 8 bits of flexion, so you have sufficient resolution for the task, and it provides 30 reports per second, which is, again, fast enough for the needs of our application. However, the third crucial bit of hardware we need for our system is, well, the vibration system, so the tactile feedback device. Here we have to custom build it because there were no affordable devices at the time of this experiment, so we have to devise our own feedback system. So what we did was we took a set of miniature DC motors taken from pocket pagers. Pocket pagers can be disabled in terms of you can turn off the annoying beeping sound. When you do that, most of them would vibrate on your belt. So this vibration is created by these little DC motors. They're just typical 1.5-volt motors, except that at the end of the shaft, there's this little weight that's offset that creates the vibration. So we just grabbed a couple of pagers and fitted them onto the hand and provided a parallel port control with a varying amount of voltage on it. Now we're approaching onto the sort of the interface between hardware and software. Before we get into the actual software, we need to take a look at the graphics and audio feedback. And we just use a standard monitor and speaker because the objective of the experiment is not to immerse the user and to fly around in some 3D drawing. You want to focus the user on picking an object and putting it into a cup. And you don't want to distract the user in any way. And this can be simply presented by just putting it onto a monitor. And for in terms of audio feedback, you just vary the pitch when you pick up the object. Higher the pitch, higher the amount of pressure. And that requires no sophisticated sound system. A PC speaker is more than adequate for that task. To support all this, we started to use Avril. And Avril is a freeware virtual reality library which provides all the graphical support we needed for the experiment. It was developed by Bernie Roll at the University of Waterloo, so he was readily available at the time for the work. And it has several drivers, including one that supports the Logitech Red Baron, which I mentioned earlier. And it could be extended to use the 5DT glove that I mentioned earlier as well. The only other real thing that we needed customization is the actual software model. And that's just a bunch of C++ routines written in Borland C++ version 3.1, which was, again, at the time readily available. And Avril was written in this language as well, and in this specific version of the compiler. So interfacing and running your programs was much more convenient than, say, in another system, which might be Windows-based. So now that we have an idea of how all the pieces fit together in our architecture, we can take a look at the software implementation, or what exactly makes up the virtual test bed. Before we actually go into that, we have to make a few assumptions in terms of making the system performance as optimal as possible. So in this case, we use a two-finger grip model, because when you want to pick up something, you can just use two fingers to pick up anything. And by using this assumption, this really reduces the number of polygons you need in the environment. And in terms of collision detection, pressure modeling, it makes things much more easier. Second simplifying assumption is that we use a fixed side viewpoint, because, again, the purpose of the task is not to fly around. We just want the person to move a hand and pick up an object and put it back into a receptacle. And all that requires is just to look at some fixed scene and pick it up. You don't really need a rotating view or anything like that. So a fixed viewpoint is quite sufficient. And again, it simplifies the processor graphical requirements and a bunch of other things. And we also restrict this into a 2D plane, because since we're presenting it on a monitor, a natural user interface would be, again, something on the XY plane fixed on the monitor, since our display is not an immersive head-mounted system. Now, in terms of the hardware interfacing, which I showed you a little bit briefly in the architecture, again, a lot of the drivers were provided by Avril, and a lot of the hardware came with encapsulated SHIP routines. So there's a lot of sample code already available if a driver wasn't there, and we just simply just put them in a wrapper class and then put it into Avril. In terms of calibration, that's important, because when you're using the 5DT glove, each person has a different way of grasping things, so we had to make a custom calibration routine for that. As I mentioned earlier, graphics is handled by Avril, and in terms of the modeling side of things, there are three important components of this. We want to deal with the interactions, the recording of data, and the physics modeling. In terms of interactions, we want to deal with collision detection. Because of these simplifying assumptions, you can really do this very quickly and very easily. All this does is simply uses bounding boxes and intersections of polygons in 2D. And you can do this at an incredibly fast frame rate for a task. For recording of data, all this involves is writing to a text file while you're running your program. And finally, for the physics side of things, you want to be able to pick up an object and drop it. So we did this very simple model of gravity, where you can drop things, but you can't throw things around. So objects don't have inertia, basically. And in terms of the pressure side of things, again, for speed and simplicity, we used a linear threshold model. So basically, when you pick up something, we map the angle between your two fingers linearly. So when you decrease the angle, the pressure increases linearly. And if you go past a certain threshold, the object will be considered destroyed. So now that we know these little bits and pieces of what is behind the software implementation, we can actually look at the description of the software implementation in the diagram. What this represents is sort of like how the virtual testbed is and how it works. We start off with a system initialization and calibration, which sort of says the system starts up and we calibrate the glove. Then what we do is start up Avril. Avril is event-driven, so we just have an event manager run up. And at each major event, we check all these things. So at each major time slice, when you read in input devices, you get data from the glove and the Red Baron tracker. Then what you do is you pass this information into a collision detection routine. And if there's any collisions worth mentioning, we determine if there's any grasping required. And we feed the pressure information to the recorded data file. And then we present all this information back to the user. So we provide visual, audio, and tactile feedback through the graphics library, the speaker interface, and the tactile feedback interface back to the parallel port to the vibro-tactile motors. And then we upgrade the graphics, and then we just check if the user wants to quit. If so, we stop. If not, we continue the loop again and again and again until the experiment is over. In terms of the actual performance of the system, well, what we did was basically we wrote the system up, implemented it, and then we did some pre-testing with some users to make sure that we meshed out all the possible bugs in the system. Then what we did was we actually ran the experiment and onto actual 24 subjects and got some results. What we found out from the experiment is that initial calibration was very important. As I mentioned, people had a different way of grasping things. And there's also some kind of noise introduced by the glove itself. And so these two things indicate that perhaps this should have been improved on early on instead of finding this out later in the actual results of the experiment. Another important thing is that people do prefer to have more realistic graphics and sound and virtual reality immersion. Again, in terms of time and in terms of what kind of computing power we had available at the time, this wasn't entirely possible without a major investment. But nonetheless, implementing the system, there wasn't any major problems, and I did record the actual results we needed to give you this, basically. This is just a sample set of slides from another presentation I made, and this gives you an idea of what kind of results we got from doing this experiment with the system. The test bed showed that people were much more better with vibrotactile feedback at the beginning. This is the vibrotactile feedback group, and this is the control group. With vibrotactile feedback, people were significantly faster than the control group, at least on day one. By day three, both groups were more or less the same in performance. So there's possibly some kind of training effect going on. A second interesting result is the amount of damage or pressure on the object. This is a percentage of the maximum threshold that the object can withstand. The vibrotactile feedback group and the control group both incurred increasing amount of damage on the object as the sessions increased, although there wasn't too great a statistical difference between the two groups in terms of who did more damage than the other. This seems to suggest that people tended to move faster in the end, opting for a faster strategy to complete the task as opposed to doing a very careful manipulation of the object. Perhaps this might be due to the fact that people prefer to finish a task as quickly as possible so that you have the minimum chance of this damaging the object along the way. Whereas if you're moving very carefully during this long period, there's a chance that you might slip or mess up or damage the object. So in conclusion, from these results of the experiment, we found that vibrotactile feedback was really good for initial grasp in the object, but in terms of very fine control, that might leave much to be desired. Perhaps a real force feedback system would be much more appropriate for this case. And that basically concludes the presentation. So what we've gone through is just an overall high-level design of the system. I showed you all the architecture and the components required and how things fit together in terms of flow diagram, and showed you some experimental results. And that's basically it. If you have any questions, feel free to ask.